We're in 23 and verse 1. I read it 13 and verse 2 earlier because I was reading it backwards. I just started off thinking backwards because Hebrew is backwards, or else English is backwards and Greek is backwards, one or the other. Everything that side of Jerusalem is from right to left, and everything that... Right. That's just the way it is. All right. Now let's see if I can read it. I'm trying to finish Volume 3 so we won't have too much lapse in between classes. I really want to finish the book of Genesis one of these days for you girls and guys. We're almost finished here. But I'm working on... You saw 5 volumes at home. You know, I'm on Stage 3, I'm in Volume 5, I think it is. Where you go, I write the Hebrew, I write the English, and then translation, then I go back and write the pronunciation of everything, and then I put all of the number 4 and 5 passes, all the verbs and the pages they go on, and all the nouns, and what pages are found on, and the roots. So, but I think I'm in chapter 28 in the 4th and 5th pass, and the 5th, and volume 5, and chapter 46. Now, chapter 46 on the 3rd pass. All right, Sarah. We're going to talk about Sarah. What does Sarah mean? Sarah. What does Sarah mean? Sarah. Remember? Huh? Yeah, a fighter. All right. My friend used to have a dog. It was a red... what they call a red bone hound. And when we turned all the dogs loose, old fighter would go around all the time. And when they get to the tree and they start treeing, he'd find somebody to fight with. That's Sarah. Fighter. All right, Sarah. It comes, the word prince comes from that. And a prince is a conqueror and a fighter. And, of course, Sarah comes from that same word. And what other name? What very, very... important name in the Bible comes from that. Israel. What? Israel. All right. All from the same root. Okay. Old Sarah. Wayiyu. Haye. All right. And that's kind of like a chaye, okay? That's got a CH sound on it, okay? Chaye. Just a little bit from the throat. Sarah. What's this next word? Miah. All right. Miah. Shana. We Esrim. Shana. We Shiva. Shanim. Shane. Chaye. Sarah. Sound like you're saying the same word over and over again. You know, there's a lot of T's and a lot of S's in Hebrew. A lot of T's and a lot of S's. Wayiyu. And they became, or and became, life. Life of Sarah. And down at the bottom, page 979 is the root where you go look up in Brown, Driver, and Briggs for Sarah, okay? And it's there, this, that root right there. 100, Miah. 100. That word you can look up on 548. See those? Are they written down in yours? Okay. You can go back in those page numbers and look these words up, okay? And then Shana is years. And we know that a girl, there's a girl's name Shana, isn't it? Shana? Her name means years. Shana. All right. And then Wishrim. All right. And what does the wit on the front of that, what does that mean? Wit. Page 253, with. And. All right, the little conjunction. What is a Greek equivalent to that? Chi. Thank you. A plus for tonight. Chi. And with. All right. Wish, dream. See the yod and the mammal on the end of that? That's where it's plural. Wish, dream. And 20. Shana, years. We, Shiva, Shiva is 7, and 7, Shanim, years, Shana, and Shanim, All right. And then Shawnee, years of Chaye, her life. Chaye, life of Sarah. All right. As the Bible kept saying at the end of so many times when we were going in the, where everybody died back there in the early part of the book of Genesis, and it says, meops, 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 and they died. Not only did they die, but they stayed dead. Meop means to die and stay dead. Okay? What to moth? Okay, now, it in modern Hebrew, it ends with a sharp T. What, it would be va-tamat. But in biblical Hebrew, it is va-tamat. Va-tamat. That's a soft, a towel is always a soft one unless it's got the little dit in the middle of it. Then we know it's either doubled or strong. Okay? And what is the other one? That's the hard T all the time. Tet. All right. That's the hard one. That's hard all the time. That's T, like our T sound. All right? You got an A too?
Yeah, right.
Sarah. All right. Bik Ker Yat. Arba. He. Shivron. The Oritz. Kenan. Wayar Bu. Avraham. Lis. Pod, Le Sarah, We Lib Kota, and died and stayed dead. Third person feminine singular, cal, wow, consecutive, imperfect. She died and stayed dead. Wakamot. Page 559 in Brown, Driver, and Briggs, and page 562 in Kohler and Baumgartner. The reason why I'm saying these numbers so you'll know where they are, I want you to understand what they're down there for. It took me a lot of work to put all of them down there, okay? So you at least ought to know what they're there for. You don't have to go to Strong's and look it up. You can go right straight to the lexicon. Sarah. All right. And then it says, Bik Keriot. All right. Bik Keriot. Now, that last final T there has got an H with it also. There was a disciple, matter of fact, an apostle of Jesus. His name was Judas Iscariot. All right? Iscariot, man from Keriot. This is the place right here, the man from Keriot. All right? Keriot means cities. It means some place where there is a congregation of people. Arba, and that means fourfold. Keriot Arba, and in the Septuagint is Arbach. All right. Keriot Arba, the city fourfold. All right, very large city. A city with four sides, a city that's quarters, got quarters in it. It's a large city like Bakersfield, you know. It's spread out all over the place. He, and then Chebron, or Hebron. Now, I'm going to try to get my slides together so I can show on Sunday morning will be the only Sunday school classes, Valley Baptist Church, and I'm going to show slides of Israel. And some of the slides I'm going to show are from Hebron. I was hoping that I could get them out today and show at least the slide where we came to Hebron here so you can see what Hebron was. Hebron means a company. It means companions. It means alliance. It means to unite. And that's the way you spell it in the Septuagint. Okay? Chebron. So we have here, we have Chebron. Chebron. Now, modern Hebrew would say what?
Hebron.
All right. But it's Chebron. And they knew back when they did the Septuagint. You want to find out how you pronounce Hebrew back there? You go back to the Septuagint and kind of figure it out. They knew how to say it back then. All right. Chebron. And the Septuagint goes back to what? What period of time? When was the Septuagint translated? In Alexander the Great's time, remember? All right. About 300 B.C. All right, about 300 B.C. So they have the pronunciation from the Septuagint into the Greek 300 B.C. or 285 to 300 B.C., whatever. How many of you heard the story of the Septuagint? How many of you know the story of the Septuagint, how it was called the Septuagint?
I know.
Anybody?
I know a story.
A story. Okay, let's get the story.
Okay. In Alexandria,
yes.
Whoever was in charge, Ptolemy, assembled 71 sages.
72.
Okay. And told them to write the scriptures.
Go and translate the scriptures, put them in different cells. All right. And they all went and made a copy of the Septuagint. And the legend goes that every one of them copied the Hebrew scriptures into Greek exactly the same. There was not one mistake. Now, that's not quite right. That's the legend. That's the Catholic legend. What happened? We have the Septuagint. The Septuagint did make mistakes in different places. Absolutely. We can go to Genesis 1 and 1. We can look at them. And if you know Greek and you know some Hebrew now, you would figure out the mistakes that they made. But that was a story, that it was a perfection, that it was guided by God. Absolutely. Why do we have the Septuagint? Why did they want the Septuagint? Why did they want the Septuagint? The Jews in Alexandria didn't speak Hebrew at all. As a matter of fact, most of the Hebrews in Israel didn't speak Hebrew. They spoke Aramaic, which is kin to Hebrew. All right? But they did not speak Hebrew, and Hebrew was not a common language. They had basically laid their language down by then. Even when they were off in the exile, the synagogues were called synagogues, okay? Synagogue, it comes from synagoge. Synago. Synago means what? The place of going together. Now, it should have been not synagogue if they were speaking Hebrew, but moed, the place of going together. But it was not. It was synagogue, because they didn't even use their language. All right? And they could have a synagogue. They said that's when they started their synagogue services back at that time. Let's go back to Chebron now. Alliance, to unite, the company, it means friend. The in Arabic, the word Chebron, the name Abraham, they say in Arabic that the name Abraham comes from Hebron, which meant friend of God. Okay? Anybody hear that one before? No? Anyway. Hebron. Friend or united place. Be'eris. And modern Hebrew would be what? Be'eris. They would drop the sahe sound and just put an S on the end of it. But it's a TS sound. Eretz. Be'eris. And then Kenan. The land, inland of Canaan. Canaan means what? Canaan. That is in the Septuagint right there, Canaan. What does Canaan mean? Comes from the name Cain. Gotten or possession. I have gotten or I have possessed. Okay? We have a Bible. In the third chapter of the book of Genesis. Let's look at that for just a moment. Now, some of you have gone here with me before and some of you have not. So let's... I don't even have it. You got the Hebrew Bible?
No.
Does anybody have... No. You have a Hebrew?
Yeah.
I should have brought mine.
Oh, yeah.
4 and 1. Doesn't want to stay there.
Yeah.
I can do something to hold it up here. And it says, and Adam, Yadah, knew Heth, his wife. All right? Had
relationship with his wife. This thing slipped.
I can't hold on to this thing. How do you hold on to this thing? It wants to run away from me. All right? And the man and the Adam, he had sexual relationship with his wife, Hava. All right, Hava. This thing's doing all kinds of things to me, brother. It's not even there anymore.
I'm not getting along with this thing. I have to have a book set still.
That was nothing to set still. All right. Cindy, what does 4:1 say there to you?
And then Adam had sexual intercourse with Eve, his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to a son.
All right, now hold on right there. All right. And she gave birth. All right, she conceived and gave birth and kept on birthing. In other words, he lived. All right. And his name was what?
Cain.
Which means I have gotten. I have gotten. I have gotten, or I have a possession. Gotten, and she said, I have gotten a man, et Jehovah, even Jehovah. I have gotten the Messiah, is what she thought. I have gotten the Messiah. All right? I have gotten the Messiah. Now, that word kanan goes back here, which means possessing or gotten. All right? Possession or gotten. Now, if you go all the way back to the curse that Noah, actually Jehovah through Noah, placed upon the inhabitants of Canaan, possession, whose land would that land be in the end, this Canaan? In the end result, who would own the land of Canaan? Not the Canaanites, but the Jews would own it, because that would be their possession. Okay? Canaan. Now that's quite a story. In land of Canaan. And then it says, and went, and kept on going, Abraham. Abraham loved his wife, Sarah. And he kept on mourning. He kept on wailing. It's kaphaste in Greek, it's called infinitive construct. He kept on to mourn for her. He kept on mourning. He kept on weeping for Sarah. And to weep. He kept on crying and moaning and wailing and weeping for her. Called infinitive construct. The suffix is third person feminine singular. That's where we get... And he kept on to weep for her. Okay? Penthese. All right. Let's go on a little bit further. Wayagam. All right. Avraham. Mial. El Panay Tahom. Remember that? Huh? El Pene Tahom in Genesis, the first chapter. And Spirit God, Ruah Elohim, suffered over, mourned over the Pene, the faces of the deep. That's the word faces right there. That's Pene, face. Alright? Alright. Pene, Mito, Lathavar, El, Bene, Chet, Lemor. Say Lemor. Roll that R just a little bit, Lamor. Okay. Wayagam. And he rose up and stayed up. Third person masculine singular, call, while consecutive and perfect, page 877 in Brown, Driver, and Brig, and page 1086 in Kohler and Baumgartner. Abraham, page 4. Abraham. What does Abraham mean? Not in Arabic. I just told you that a while ago, friend of God. What?
Friend of God.
exalted father of a multitude. Okay. From upon, me all, from upon, man is from, and all is from upon the face. All right? The face, pane, that means the face, facing. All right? His dying one. His dying one. Mito. Masculine singular call participle. Suffix is third person masculine singular. Mioth is the root. See the mio? Mem, yod, and tau at the bottom of it? Or wow and tau? That's the root of this word. And then it says, why the bar? What does the bar mean? Huh? Word, but how does it, what does it really mean? What is the idea of it? Lining up in a row. Lining something up in a row. That's what it means. What is a Greek equivalent to that, basically? What? What? Lego. Lego. Which means I speak or I pick out and line up words in a row for you to understand. The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet in Jeremiah the first chapter in verse 1, I think it is. The word of the Lord, the Davar, the word of the Lord. It says here, third person magnitude singular, PL, while consecutive imperfect. And his dying ones, and he kept on speaking unto the sons. He was trying to convince Elphinai unto the sons of Cheth. Now what's Cheth mean? Cheth. If you look page 366, by the way, that's in Brown Driver Briggs, but you can go and look at it in many of the Hebrew lexicons. What does Cheth mean? These are the Hittites. Alright? What does Heth or Cheth mean? These Hittites. Hittites. Anybody know? It means terrible. Terrible. Fearful. Giants. Something that terrified. Terrible, terrifying ones. Who were these dudes? When Caleb and Joshua went into the land of Canaan, remember where they went? They went up to Hebron. Alright? And what did they see up there? They got some great big grapes, didn't they? Great big grapes. But what else did these people see up there? Giants, the Nephilim. The Nephilim were very large. 10-11 feet tall, some of them. How tall was Goliath? He's one of these dudes. He's one of these Nephilim. He was, what, 9 foot 9 inches tall or something like that? Right around 10 feet tall. Big. Big people. They said, we're grasshoppers in their sight. These terrible ones. Well, you're getting ready to witness the oldest land grant, indeed, in the world right here. The law, this is the first, the oldest land grant in the Bible right here. Now, of course, God promised Abraham, and he promised Jacob, and he promised Isaac, and all of the descendants of Abraham that they were going to have the land of Canaan. Now, that is really a land grant from God. But this one here is money is going to be exchanged for this piece of ground. And this is the one that I wanted to bring and show you the picture, the slide of this. I'm going to make them into a picture or something. I got to have some someplace where you can see the Hebron. This cave. That cave is still there. It's still there. The cave of Machpelah. The sons of Cheth Limor, saying, call infinity construct. That comes from Amar. Look down there. I don't have it down there, do I? Write down this in there. This is the root of that word. Right there, Amar. Okay? That's the root. The three-letter root from Hebrew, Amar. And we've looked at the word Wayomar before, many times, Wayomar. Your little daughter, she gets a kick out of the word. She said, Wayomar makes her laugh. Wayomer. Okay? Now here's one of the roots from that Limor. Saying is called infinitive construct. To be saying, all right, and to the sons, the terrible ones. Page 366, that's where you look at that Heth. all there. And then we have Ger. Ger, Wita, Washav. Anoki, Imakem, Tenu, Le, Achazot, Kliver. Kliver. All right. And then Imakem, We ek bera meti mele fane. All right, well, let's go back up there. There's a lot of writing at the bottom of that thing on yours. Okay. Sometimes I don't know whether I had it down there when I printed it or not. The berry, buying the burial cave in Mamre. All right. Have you ever heard of spelunking? 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 What does that mean? Spelunking. What? Spelunking? Spelunking. Cave exploring. Exploring caves. The word here in Greek is spalao tu ar akru to diplo. Alright? The cave, the where we get the word? Spelunking, all right. Spalao tu akru tu deplu. The double-mouthed cave. That's what it means. The double-mouthed cave. The double-mouthed cave. Gear. Old John Wayne used to say in some of the movies, "Hey, pilgrim." That's the word pilgrim right there. What is a pilgrim? What is a pilgrim? A stranger. It is a full-time RVer. Okay, that's somebody that has doesn't have any roots, like Abraham. And one of the things I'm going to show you also in these slides, that Cindy, you've been to Israel and over the land. Did you see any of the... See, I was over there in 1975 and 76. It was still yonder years, you know, the Stone Age. Did you see any of the Bedouins out there in the tents, the sprawling tents, with the, did you see the, okay, with all the sheep pens and all that for them, sheepfolds, all that? All right. The stranger and a pilgrim. They went from place to place. First of all, if you have a lot of animals, remember the movie Grass? Those people had to travel long periods of time. The Indians, American Indians, they traveled like they were nomads. Most American Indians were nomadic. The Plains tribes were nomads. And they would move in their tents like the Hebrews did. They were moving their tents and they would go and they would constantly move. Why? Food for their pony herds. They didn't have any milk cows or anything like that, but they had pony herds, and they would go from place to place. Up here at the greasy grass, what they call the little bighorn up there, they said that the ground, when they had that big religious revival, when General Crook and Custer went up there and jumped upon the Lakota people, they were having the largest religious revival they had ever had because they didn't know what to do with the white problem. America had an Indian problem, but the Indians had a white problem. Okay? So they went up there and they were going to do a lot of praying about this white problem. And they went up there and they did a sun dance, and they had about, they said that they might have had 50,000 to 100,000 ponies. And the ponies, there were so many of them that they had just totally eaten down all of the grass in the whole area up there. And they also said when they broke up, after they attacked all of them, you know, Custer wanted to get in there and kill them. He wanted to let me at them. He had Gatling guns. He had Hotchkiss guns. He had all kinds of guns. But he didn't want to carry them with him because it slowed him down. He wanted to get in there and kill all the Indians. Now, see, I'm Lakota. And my family knows things about that story and about that battle that nobody else knows. And they've never brought it out. He went in there to kill all of them. And they had told him previously, because he had Cheyenne children. There are Cheyenne children today still called Custer to this day. His wife told him, "You killed our people. You went into the Battle of the Washita. You killed Black Kettle. See, my grandfather and my uncle were in that battle. And you're not, well, we're not going to let you do this anymore. You do this again, we're going to kill you." So he was going against what he had promised them, against the treaty he had made with the Cheyenne. So he went up there and he attacked the village. When Custer rode into the village with his troops, he split them up, he rode into the village. He started crossing the creek, and a little boy by the name of White Bull shot Custer and killed him. He never was in any battle at the Little Bighorn. Custer never made it to the Little Bighorn. He was killed right there. His troops threw him back across the horse, dead, and took him up there on the knoll up there where Custer's last stand was. Custer's last stand was crossing that creek. But the Lakota people and the Cheyenne people were afraid to tell that that little 12-year-old boy killed Custer. So they never said anything. About 50 years later, they wrote down an affidavit saying that White Bull killed Custer before he ever got to the Battle of the Little Bighorn. They had a great big religious revival up there. When they left out of there, there were trails 200 and 300 yards wide where they traced the different tribes going. Different tribes. They were pilgrims all over that land. They had the Black Hills because they didn't think that was worth anything. They said, "Well, you can have that forever from now on. You know, this is your land you're going to treat it for because it wasn't any good. There wasn't anything there they thought they could find." But we find out now that Black Hills gold and uranium and everything else you can think of was in there. They wanted it later. Pilgrims. They had to move from place to place because they followed the grass, the forage. All right? A pilgrim. He may remain the pilgrim in the land. Pilgrim, look out up on page 444. He remained the pilgrim in the land all of his life. He was always a stranger and a pilgrim in the land. But Abraham owned one little area, and that was a cave of Machpelah in Hebron. That land he owned. And now he's dealing for it right now. A stranger and a pilgrim I with you. All right? You mikem. You give. All right? You give. Masculine plural. Call imperative. You give to me. Achetzot. All right? Achetzot cleaver. Possession. A burial cave. A burial cave, cleaver, cleaver. Look at that word, cleaver, right there. Cleaver. We talked about this a little bit in the Sunday school class this morning, so you guys got a head start on these others, okay? What does cleaver mean? Here it means a cave, but it means something you can dig. It is a... You go out here to Green Lawn or you go out to Union Cemetery or something and they dig a hole out there and they put people in. That's a cave in the ground. And you put people in a cave. That's a cleaver. It is also in Greek called a what? Menomion. We got our word memorial service from Menomion. Okay? Cleaver, you can dig. You can dig a cleaver. Now, this is called the double-mouthed cave. The double-mouthed cave. The cave of Machpelah. The double-mouthed cave. Now, this cave, evidently, there was some natural... This was a natural cave. In this land, there are many caves there, okay? Many, many caves in this area. But this one was what they called the double-mouthed cave. And how many of you... How many have been in the land of Israel? Harry, you been over there? Israel? Have you been? You've been there, Cindy. You've been to the Gordon's tomb, the Garden tomb.
Yes.
Where Jesus was supposedly buried in there and everything. If you go in there, it is a cave. It's a cave that's carved out. It's dug. It's cleaver. That means to dig or a cave. It is a grave or a cave. And in there, when you walk into it, to the right side, there is a shelf in there where you buried people. In this cave of Machpelah, there are many shells. It's double-sided, double-faced, double mouth on both sides. And there are many shells where they buried. Who all was buried in the cave of Machpelah? Sarah's buried there. She was the first one to be buried there, wasn't she? Okay.
Isn't Joseph?
What? Joseph's probably buried there too. All right. A burial cave with you that I may bury and keep on being buried. First person contrast signal, cal cohortive. My dying ones, masculine the senior, cal participle, suffix, first person contrast singular. From before me, from before my face. I want to take my child from before my face, or my wife from before my face, and bury them, okay? Now, Abraham is buried in Genesis 25:7-10, okay? Genesis 25:7-10. Abraham is buried there. With Genesis 17:8, it talks about this same place. In Leviticus 25:23, 1 Chronicles 29:15, Psalm 105:12, and 119:19, Hebrews 9:11-13, Acts 7:16, Genesis 49:30, and Hebrews 11:22. I'm talking about Joseph. Genesis 50:24, and Joshua 24:31-32, and Jacob buried there in Genesis 48:50, and verse 12-13, and Acts 7:15-16, and Genesis 4:49-32. This is a pretty cool place. And all the land of Israel that I went to, the cross of Calvary with the tomb, especially Calvary. I'll show you a picture of that with me standing up there by Calvary when I do the pictures. And when I saw that, it just my hair stood on end when I saw that Calvary. Because I just felt that that's where he was crucified. Now, there's basically about 3 Calvaries over there. You know that. There's like 20-some-odd Mount Sinai. You just got to figure out which one the right one is, okay? The oldest one. St. Catherine's is probably the oldest one. Now, when I went to the cave of Machpelah, there's bullets flying. There was gunfire. I think that I have it on recorded from there also. But when I went there, and I looked down in that cave where Abraham was carried and where Sarah was carried and where all of these people were carried and buried in that cave, this is all the Bible history in one place. I'm going to tell you, that is a, if you want to talk about holy place, that's a holy ground. I think where somebody is buried is holy ground, as far as I'm concerned. All American Indians, when they buried somebody and left them in a place, that was sacred ground. And more white people got in trouble for going and crossing sacred ground. That's where their ancestors are buried. They loved them. The Cherokee back in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Tennessee, they didn't want to leave that ground because that was the ground where their ancestors were buried. They considered it sacred ground. Out here at Union Cemetery, it disgusts me what people do. Down in Los Angeles area, when they put in the freeways, they just threw away and dumped bones and people that had been buried there 100 years before. They have no respect for it at all. Union Cemetery. You know Brett in the class, Brett Johnson? His father worked with the county, and he was out there at the Kern River one time, and he saw this great big truck coming in from Union Cemetery. Big dump truck. Had a lot of headstones in it. All the headstones were dated in the 1800s and early 1900s. They just dumped them in the river. Just dumped them in the river. Hell, none of the relatives around. It don't matter anymore. I went over to Union Cemetery and I said, all of Zorro's gang were buried here. They said, what? All of Zorro, Joaquin Marietta, all of his gang are buried. Many of them are buried after Union Cemetery. And I started naming off the names of the gang in the 1850s and 60s. Zorro was a real person. Joaquin Marietta, there were 5 Joaquins. So I started naming these guys off, Avelino Martinez and the different ones, and J.J. Lopez and all of the different people that were out there in the cemetery. You know what? They didn't have records of any of those people. I got pictures of their gravestones out there, but they're gone. This ground where I walked over there, when I walked into the land and I walked into Hebron up there, to me that was holy ground. That's where Abraham is. That's where Jacob is. And Isaac is. And Sarah. Those are our spiritual roots right there. And all of these years, all of these thousands of years that they were buried there, they've all, every one of them, have honored and respected those graves. Honored and respected them. What?
Why would Jesus bury in a cave if they didn't think he was Messiah? If they didn't think he was really...
Oh, Jesus?
Yeah,
why did Jesus' disciples bury him in the grave? First of all, the Bible said, the Old Testament said he would be buried with the rich. Joseph of Arimathea offered his grave. He went to Pilate, and him and Nicodemus begged for Jesus' body. Jesus, where should have Jesus been buried? Where should he have been buried according to the law? Where should Jesus have been buried?
Gehenna.
Where?
Gehenna.
Gehenna. You know what Gehenna is? That's the Valley of Hinnom. That was the garbage pit. They took all outlaws and criminals, and they did not give them a burial at all. They put them out there in the garbage pit, and they gave them a burial of an ass. That's what they call the burial of an ass or a donkey. They took all of the dead animals that died, they drug them out there and threw them in Gehenna. All of the criminals, when they took them down off the cross, they threw them in Gehenna, the garbage pit. They didn't give them a burial at all. But Joseph of Arimathea was probably his uncle, and Nicodemus, which was a convert, and Joseph of Arimathea was a convert also. They believed in the Messiah. But they begged for his body. Now, maybe they didn't know exactly what they were doing, but they were fulfilling Scripture. And they took him and they buried him in this grave that had never been used. Okay? It said it had never been used. It was a new grave. Because Joseph of Arimathea was getting old, so he had this grave quiver carved out. Now, whether it is the Gordon's tomb or not, we don't really know for sure. Okay, but it was there someplace. I think it probably was Gordon's tomb. But there's a lot of other people think differently. Okay, we can't say, that's something we can't say for sure. You can go there and you can see all this, but right up here is Golgotha. And there's more than one Golgotha tomb, by the way. And right down here is where the tomb is. That's down below it. The curve. The, well, there are archaeologically some things are not absolutely sure. We talk about things like it's for sure, but really they might be. How many Sinai's are there? 26 Sinai, possibly. 26, like I said earlier, 26, I think, 26 Sinai, Mount Sinai. But your question is?
It can come up with very unique names.
Huh?
It can come up with unique names for your
yeah. Why did they bury Jesus if they knew he was the Messiah? They didn't know. The Jews were more convinced that Jesus was going to be raised from the dead than the disciples were. They weren't. They went to Pilate. And they demanded a Roman guard for the tomb. What did Pilate tell them? Jump in the creek. Take your own guard. Take your own temple guards, the Jewish soldiers. You don't get any Roman ones. I already crucified him. That's all I'm going to do. You take the Jewish guards. You take the temple guards and you take them. And you just make that temple, that grave, that tomb as secure as you can make it for yourselves. Forget you. Jump in the creek. In other words, is what he told them. They went out there and they put that seal in that tomb and they took the high priest's seal, ring, seal, signet ring, and they put clay all around it and they sealed that. That's how you seal the tomb. There was only one high priest's signet ring. Okay, it wasn't a Roman. It wasn't Pontius Pilate's signet ring. It was a, you know, we see all these movies with the Roman soldiers. The Roman soldiers weren't there. They weren't there. He said, do the best you can. Okay? So they take and they seal up the tomb. And then they're all time figuring out, what are we going to do now? What are we going to do if he raised from the dead? They'll say he raised from the dead. What did the disciples, what were they doing?
Hiding.
The church was hiding out. They were meeting in people's houses and said, oh, you know. And they went down there. They buried him twice. Did you know that? According to some theologians, they buried Jesus two times. They gave him quick burial. And then he went back and put more spices, don't even wrap him up. Because it was a holy day. When he took him down, they didn't have time to bury him right. They went back and they wrapped him up and they gave him another burial. And now on the third day, after 3 days, Mary goes out there, and Martha and all this, and he appears to them. First of all, they see angels. Shocked. And they said, where's his body? Somebody's taking his body. Where is the... in the quiver, where's his body? And she spoke to him. And he spoke to her, and when she was speaking to her, she recognized what? His voice. Why didn't she recognize him? Why didn't she recognize Jesus?
She
had
tears in her eyes.
Huh? Well, she had tears in her eyes also. But why, one reason, another reason why she didn't recognize Jesus?
He was glorified.
What?
He was glorified.
Yeah, he was glorified, all right. What else? Did Jesus have scars in his hands? Did he have the wound in his side still? When Thomas saw him?
Yeah.
But he had the marks in his hand. When, in the Old Testament, where it says that the Jews, when they see him, and they mourn over him, like one mourns for their only son, and they said, where did you get those scars in your hand? And in your side? You know, I think those scars are going to be with Jesus in eternity. Maybe he was so beat up that his face was so changed by the beatings, the scars, that she couldn't recognize him. They said he was disfigured by the beatings. Have you ever seen somebody so beat up? How many of you have seen the Rocky movies? That kind of, sort of, if you've seen somebody, I mean, they would have stopped the fight like that, but in the old days, I've seen people beat up pretty bad in street fights. Well, they were all swelled up. Maybe he will carry those scars into eternity. I know that when he comes back, he will have those scars. Because Israel said, where did you get the scars? He said, what? In the house of my friends. And they wept. All right. He said, you won't see me again until you say what? Baruch Hashem. Blessed is the name. Blessed and holy is the name. They wouldn't accept him, would they? They didn't believe that he was going to raise from the dead. Then they buried him. When he rose, Peter and John had a foot race, didn't they? Peter and John had a foot race over there where they were going over there, and who outran who? Remember? When they got over there. Where is he? Huh? He's a good student. He's been my student for a long time. See,
I thought he was looking at
us. He's heard me say this before. See, some of you are getting reruns. This is the first time for some of you. And they found him. And he told them, go meet with me. And then all of a sudden he appeared to them and they were all shocked. And remember what Thomas said? Didymus? What did he say? I will not believe that he rose from the dead. Now this is one of the church members, okay? I will not believe that is him. So what? I thrust my hand in his side and I put my finger through the holes, the scars in his hand. And what did Jesus say? Come here, Thomas. Thrust your hand in my side. Put your hand through the nail prints in my hand. So he had them then, didn't he? He had them then. They were shocked. They were totally shocked. They buried him, thought that he was dead. They thought their Messiah King was dead because they thought John the Baptist. Did John the Baptist believe that he had baptized the Messiah? But then we have another account, and he sent his disciples to him, and he said to the Jesus' disciples, and he said, are you the Messiah, or are we to look for another one? Why? Because the Messiah King, they thought, would take control and ran Herod off and take control of the temple area. Now, he did that at the very end, didn't he? When he went into the triumphant entry into the temple and he horsewhipped the representative of the high priest and turned over the money changing table and said, you're bankrupt. And, you know, they did that. The word bankrupt. Bankrupt comes broke from broken bench. That's an old term. The pagan temples all had priests in them and they had banks in them. And if a priest proved unfaithful, he was taken out and horsewhipped. His bench was broken publicly. He was horsewhipped or whipped, beaten with a cat of nine tails and maybe crucified or hung or beheaded. And that's what Jesus did to them. He did something that they knew about. He turned over their benches, broke their benches, horsewhipped them, and said, you people are corrupt. You're bankrupt. Your religion is bankrupt. And he took over because he was the Messiah. And they said, Hosanna in the highest. And then the Jews came along and said, you're going to let them do that? He said, if I didn't do that, what? If I didn't let them cry out, what? The rocks would cry out. The rocks would cry out. Let's go into Genesis 49. Genesis 49. Robert Sheet 49. Real quick. This verse we just can't jump over quickly because this to me is a very important place in the Bible. In the 48th and 49th chapter, we have extreme prophecy. If I live long enough to do this and preach this prophecy in the 49th chapter, I'm really looking forward to that. That's what you call a final finale. Genesis 49 and verse 29. He prophesied how all of the sons of Israel, how all the tribes of Israel, how they would act and what would happen. Verse 29, then he charged them and said to them, I'm about to gather to my people. Bury me with my fathers. He didn't say he's going to Sheol. They weren't going to put his body in Sheol. They're going to put his body in a quiver. Okay? Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephraim the Hittite. What does Teth mean? Are the Hittites? The terrible ones. These are the giants. This is where Caleb and Joshua's inheritance. They were the only ones that got to live through that 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. They went in there and they were 80-something years old when they went in there and whooped them giants. My people, bury me. Bury me. Quiver me in with my fathers in the cave. That's the cave of Machpelah. In the field of Ephraim the Hittite. In the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought along with the field from Ephraim the Hittite for a burial site, and there they buried who? Abraham and his wife Sarah. And there they buried what? Isaac and his wife Rebecca. And there I buried Leah, and the field and the cave that is in it purchased from the sons of Heth. And Jacob finished charging his sons. He drew his feet up into the bed, and he breathed his last, and was gathered unto his people. Now he was gathered, his spirit was gathered unto Sheol. Sheol is not quiver. What did they do with his body? They embalmed him, and they took him, and they had a great funeral procession all the way. In verse 6 of the 50th chapter, and Pharaoh said, "Go now and bury your father as he made you swear." So Joseph went up to bury his father, and went with him all the servants of Pharaoh and the elders of the household and all the elders of the land of Egypt. Now, I have been there where these people were. And all the household of Joseph and his father's household, and they left only the little ones and their flocks and their herds in the land of Goshen. And they went up with him both chariots and horsemen and a very great army. And they came to the threshing floor of Ephod, which is beyond Jordan, and they lamented there with a great and a sorrowful lamentation, and they observed 7 days mourning for his father. And now when the inhabitants of the land of the Canaanites saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Ephod, they said, "This is a grievous mourning for the Egyptians." How do you say Egyptian in Greek? Huh? Egyptos. How do you say it in Hebrew? Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim. A mourning for the Egyptians, and there it was named Abel Mitzrayim. Abel, the mourning of Egypt. Abel Mitzrayim, which is beyond Jordan. And thus the sons did for him as he charged them, for his sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah. Poor old Jacob was carried all the way down into Egypt. His name was Israel, his name was Jacob. Then he was brought back and placed in the land that God had promised him. Before Mamre, before the face of Mamre, which Abraham had bought with a field for a burial site from Ephraim the Hittite. Now we could go back and we could look at every one of these scriptures that I read to you, all of these. Genesis 17:8, Genesis 25:7-10, where Abraham was buried. Leviticus 25:23, 1 Chronicles 29:15, Psalm 105:12, Psalm 119:19. Hebrews 11:9-13, Acts 7:16, Genesis 49:30, Hebrews 11:22, and all of these others, Exodus 3:19, Joshua 24:31-32. Let's go to Joshua. Joshua. What's Joshua mean? Joshua 24. Joshua 24. This place, I tell you what, this place is, this gives me the willies when I was there. All I can say, this made my hair stand on end, walking into this place. Because I know they're all there. They're all there. 24:31-32. Then it came about after these things in verse 29 that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old, and they buried him in the territory of his inheritance at Timnath-Serah, which is in the hill country of Ephraim, on the north of Mount Gaash. And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders and served Joshua, had known all the deeds of the Lord which they had done for Israel. And now they buried the bones of Joseph, which the sons of Israel brought up from Egypt at Shechem, in a piece of ground which Jacob had bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver, and they became the inheritance of Joseph's sons. Look at that. All up in this hill country of Ephraim. All right in this sacred ground, the sacred graveyard. The sacred graveyard. Well, next week we'll start in 23 and verse 5. Is that all right with you? 23 and verse 5. Not next week, we won't. We won't be here next week. It'll be a couple of weeks, maybe. How long? Next year? I guess.
Next year in Israel.
Well, whenever they let us come back, we'll do this again, okay? We'll start with 23 and verse 5. What is the date today? The 18th?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hope you enjoyed the lesson tonight. There's a, I try, you know, teaching Hebrew and Greek is kind of dry sometimes, but when you study the living Word of God, it's exciting. And then the history and the psychology of the whole thing, like you asked for tonight. Why did they bury Jesus?
Especially in that particular place.
It's
like all the people that walked with him through 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And then in the end...
Then they saw him killed. He was murdered. And they saw him die. And this is the Messiah King. They didn't understand Psalm 22 and Isaiah 53. They didn't understand that he came humbly and lowly, riding on a donkey. The next time he comes, he's going to come on the charger. They expected him to come on the charger the first time. But he didn't, did he? He came on a white donkey, not on a white charger. All right. That's a whole lot different. But when he comes back again, he's going to be our Messiah King, isn't he, Brother Don?
You talked about a lot of them speaking Aramaic.
Yeah.
But I thought the common language was
Koine Greek. The common language was Koine Greek. Yeah. But some of them spoke Aramaic. We have in the Greek New Testament, the Greek New Testament is the most perfect language they can ever put the New Testament in. It's the most definite language that's ever been used among the human race. You don't make any mistakes with it. It's just perfect. You know who's speaking, you know who's speaking to, and all this stuff all the time. You know exactly what tense it's in and everything. But also in the Greek New Testament, where Jesus spoke Hebrew, it says he spoke Hebrew. It quotes it in Hebrew. It transliterates it into Greek. Okay? Where he spoke Aramaic, when he said Talitha Kumei, that's Aramaic. It said Talitha Kumei. Made her eyes. So we know when he spoke Aramaic, but most of the time he spoke Greek. And almost all the time in the New Testament where the Old Testament is quoted, it is quoted from the Septuagint and not from the Hebrew. Except in rare occasions. All right. So, yeah, they spoke some Aramaic. Aramaic is kin to Hebrew. But Paul came from a Hebrew family that spoke Hebrew. He said, I am a Hebrew of Hebrews. We spoke Hebrew in our home. Most of the Jews back at that time thought biblical Hebrew was too sacred to speak in common. They thought it was too sacred to speak, like the name of God was too sacred. They don't know how to say that name because they never spoke it. So they just call it Hadabar or Hashem, the name, the words of the name. Now we have a generation of Jews since about 1900, 1920, 30, 1948. That's where they've been speaking Hebrew forever. And we know that they're festivals and everything, they would speak Hebrew, but it was like going to a Catholic church and hear them speak Latin. They didn't really know what was going on, but they knew what to do when they spoke that language. Okay? And so they did that, you know. And whether the language wasn't exactly like that. A lot of the modern Hebrew, it really has a lot of German inflection to it. We're in the Christmas season, aren't we? I should have even brought this out this morning. Maybe next Sunday morning I'll do it also. Where did the modern Western world get the idea of Christmas? Where did it come from? Where did it come from? We talked about a little bit about it. Well, yeah, Israel. So the Feast of Hanukkah, which is the Feast of Lights, which was the celebration of the miracle of the 8 days that God kept the candlestick burning when they rededicated the temple after they took the temple back from Antiochus Epiphanes. What we call the Maccabean Revolt. Okay? But where in the world do we get the idea of Christmas trees? Be quiet. You take the teacher home. You know all this stuff.
I agree with her.
In World War I, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, a lot of Germans came to America. Now, the Jewish people in Germany, the Germans picked up some of this Hanukkah from them, and the Feast of Lights and everything, and they started picking trees, evergreen trees, and putting lights on them, like the Jews did. And they started adopting Christmas carols from the Hanukkah celebrations and giving the gifts. One of the very, in history, America was introduced to this. Actually, from the Norwegian and the Danish people and the Scandinavian, all of that area up in there, they, in the wintertime up there by December the 25th, they had a knockdown, drag-out, drunken brawl, which they called their Christmas celebration. They killed all of their stock and ate them all up, drank all of their beer, and gluttoned themselves for two or three, 4 weeks until they ran out of food, and then they would starve for the rest of the winter. They kill everything but the broodstock. And America was never supposed to celebrate history, Christmas over here at all. The founding fathers of America said that they would never allow Christmas to be celebrated in America. Did you know that?
Sure.
Never. You heard it in my church history class, didn't you? All right. Never was supposed to be celebrated here. But in World War I, at Christmas time, they were in the trenches in Europe, and the Americans and the Germans and the French and everybody were in opposing forces, and they were down in there. And it was Christmas. And just before Christmas, the Germans started singing Christmas carols in German. Well, the Americans and the French and everything, they hear these carols with the same melodies. And they started holding up branches with candles on them, celebrating Christmas. And they came out of the foxholes and the trenches. The Germans came out first. And they got out there and started exchanging presents and started looking at each other and shaking hands and helping them bury each other's dead. This was what the first armistice that they had. The first time that they ever laid aside war for Christmas in World War I. They got so fond of each other, they started showing each other their family pictures and back home and everything. And the Germans and the French and the Americans realized that, hey, these people are just, they're out here fighting like we're fighting. For a company, for a country. We're just human beings. We're all human beings together. And they got out there and they started giving each other wine and drink and water, and they were sharing their rations and things with each other, and they were having a real good time. They got to know and love each other. And they couldn't get them started back fighting again. The leaders couldn't. The Germans over there, they were just tickled to death. They were about to lose the war. Finally, an English military leader says, when they come out, I want you to take your soldiers and get your guns out, and when the Germans come out today to celebrate and to have lunch together and everything, start shooting them down. Kill them. So they ordered them to fire on the Germans. That's how they got back in the war. But those Christmas celebrations and Christmas tree and everything were spread from Europe, from Germany, into America. The Scandinavian, Norwegian, and Danish idea of Christmas was a very drunken brawl. But the Jews, where they went into Germany, in the lower, there's a northern Europe still, but in the lower parts of Germany, they were celebrating a kind of Christmas. Christ Mass is what it was. And Luther, of course, the Lutheran church there, they had started celebrating Christmas in a different way, and they had borrowed so many things from Hanukkah or from the Jews. So that's how it spread from the Jews into the Western world. And of course, American marketing, they started Christmas songs and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you know, that all that, the different songs, and of course we've got the Christmas story and all of that, and all the different things that we have today. A lot of it was marketing here in America. Christmas was always in America. It was always materialistic. It didn't have any other foundation. But they started using trees and stuff after that. That all was after 1900, mainly. And then the school started having Christmas plays. I remember I was in, more than half a century ago, we had Christmas plays and Christmas songs and everything. Are you ready to go now? Add your little story? All right, go. What? Well, that's just history. That's all it is, just history. Brother Rocker, would you dismiss us in prayer? And Amber, thank you for being here tonight. I hope you enjoyed the class.
Father, thank you for the opportunity to get together and learn, exchange information.